This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to another Cravings podcast with Pete Dillon, online at joy.org.au/cravings and live Saturdays from 1pm on Joy 94.9 in Melbourne. Exploring all that's finest in food and beverage across Melbourne and Victoria. Sponsored by La Spaghettata. Over 35 years of food, family and fun at 238 Lygon Street, Carlton. Wine and dine with La Spaghettata for an authentic Italian experience. Pasta, wine, seafood, steak and so much more. Dine in and enjoy the authentic sights and sounds of Lygon Street. Or order takeaway now via Deliveroo, Uber Eats or Foodora. Eat, drink, love with La Spaghettata. Call 9663 6102. Visit laspaghettata.com.au or find them on Facebook.
He's back. Hello, boys and girls. I'm back for another scintillating hour of food and booze talk. Lord knows I've had enough of it over the Christmas season, as I'm sure you have too. So I've taken it upon myself to contact a couple of my mates and say, hey, listen, we need to talk about what's going to happen in 2017. I have two of those such people and a little bit of a preview of some of the talent that's coming to Melbourne for 2017 as well. All that and more between now and 2pm. We are indeed talking cravings. Good afternoon. 1:30 past 1. My name is Pete Dillon. Tad Lombardo is not with me in the studio. He is currently still in the United States. He'll be back in the chair with me next week as we take you on another culinary journey somewhere around the country or indeed the city. And you'll forgive me, I've got a shocking hay fever all of a sudden. So work with me on that as we go through a program today that looks at some of those. And I don't want to use the word trends or fads or all of that. You're probably all done with kale and quinoa and all of that sort of stuff. So we're going to look at some of the things that we might see influencing restaurants this year. Whether you go and eat at a local cafe, whether you're somebody who relies almost entirely on Uber Eats for your sustenance and nourishment, or in fact, if you're somebody who likes to be right up there with all of the latest happenings in the world of food and booze, we're going to cover those today. Hilary McNevin is a freelance writer and commentator, broadcaster, good bird, old mate of mine, and she and I are going to talk a little bit about some of those food trends that may occur across 2017 or beyond. I know a couple of years ago we were talking about Peruvian and kimchi and Korean influence and all of that. So we're going to have a little bit of a look at some of those things that, you know, is kale here or not? Where are the influences going to come from? Is it places like, we've seen influences in wine from places like Georgia, which is one of the former states of the USSR. So all of those trendy sort of things that have come out of food, we look predominantly to Europe and the US for this influence and things that have taken off in the last little while, being a global population, Twitter and internet and Facebook and all of those things allows chefs to share a wonderful repertoire of knowledge and skill and new things and old things. So we're quite excited by how quickly information can be shared, and therefore we are very much on trend with what's happening around the world. The biggest thing, of course, to happen in Melbourne this year will be the arrival of the San Pellegrino Top 50 Chefs for the first time ever being held in Australia, and we know that there's a pretty good contingent. I think there's something like 80%+ of those top 50 chefs are going to be in Melbourne. So it's going to be a very exciting time at the end of March and into April to be right here in our fair city and indulging in food. So Hilary McNevin will be one of those people that we'll talk a little bit about. And once we get towards the end of the program today, we'll rehash a little visit to a fellow from a restaurant in Peru called Central. We met him at the end of last year, you and I, and he's a former pro skateboarder and all sorts of things. He relies on shamans and high priests for influence. A very interesting young man by the name of Virgilio Martinez. We're going to revisit that chat that we had with him late last year when he was here for Good Food Month with Ben Shuri at Attica. So we'll talk, we'll revisit that. You and I will have pop the feet up, make a cup of tea. We're also going to chat to Mike Benny. Mike is one of the foremost wine writers in Australia. He is right on the button of things that are happening, trending around the world in the world of wine and beverage. You and I will have a bit of a chat, I beg your pardon, with Mike and ask some of those questions about some of the wine influences or some of those new varietal influences we might see. I think there are going to be things like Grillo. You may never have heard of Grillo. It's a Sardinian grape variety that's normally used to make masala of all things, but Grillo on its own is a couple being made here in Australia and they are exceptional. Saparavi, which comes from Georgia. Again, we mentioned Georgia, the former state of the USSR, part of what is now Russia. It's a little country south of Russia. Our good friend Alice Zaslavsky is from Georgia. And Saparavi is a wine that's coming out of their big inky, dark, red, almost black wine. So Mike's going to give us a bit of a hint on some of the things that we might be able to look forward to in 27 as well. We've got all that to come. I'm going to be flying solo today, so you'll bear with me as I wander through the hour with Hilary McNevin, Mike Benny, and Virgilio Martinez. But first, we must tend to our administration. You are here on Cravings with me, Pete Dillon, on Australia's only gay and lesbian radio station, Joy 94.9.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
Do call us, 1300-JOY-949, or do send a message, 0427-JOY-949. Email onair@joy.org.au. I'm very curious to know what trends you would like to see in food. Is there something that you found, something you've discovered, something that you think we should be bringing back? I did watch a program the other day where somebody made a rice pudding, and it's a very long time since I've eaten the rice pudding. There's probably a reason for that, but somebody who may enlighten us on whether rice pudding is in fact one of those things we might see this year is the ever delightful and super knowledgeable Hilary McNevin. She joins us. Good afternoon, my dear.
Hi, Pete. How are you? Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you as well. Has it started well?
You know, it has, actually. Thank you. I've had some time away and been with my family and all lovely. So,
Queensland, though?
Did you pop up to Queensland. Oh. I did pop up for Christmas time. I was back before New Year.
Oh, we could have waved at one another. We were very close by.
Oh, really? Well, I was in Brisbane.
Yes, so was I. I've had a couple of weeks in Queensland. I was in Brisbane and the Gold Coast and Noosa and Brisbane's beautiful, very dry southwest.
Off air for a little while and talk about that.
Oh, we could let's do that after the show. Let's do it after the show.
Yes, let's.
And you're currently in regional Victoria for the day?
Yes, yeah, over for the weekend and back tomorrow. So stinking hot wherever we turn, Dale.
Well, I'll wave on my way past. I'm heading out to Ballarat this afternoon, and I think you're somewhere. Oh no, you're a bit further on. Yeah, never mind.
Okay, yes.
Yes.
But have fun. And what's in Ballarat? What's in the rack?
Oh, friends of mine have got a farm, so we're going to have a pickled onion on the lanai and a cup of cold drinks and look at the view. It's going to be very pleasant.
Beautiful.
So one of the things I wanted to pick your brains about, and we've probably got 20 or so minutes to do this, so let's go nuts. We talk each year about what's going to be the food trend or the food fad of the year, and I know we've looked in the past at things like a couple of years ago we're all going mad for Peruvian and Korean food, and I'm wondering if there's anything that's on your radar, and I'm not talking about specific ingredients or cuisines, but is there anything that's on your radar?
Well, there is, and it's kind of broader than just saying Peruvian, but if I can go back a step, Pete, on that note, I was actually wondering, you know, and this is Sydney-based, actually, this is more of a national curiosity, a question I have, or observation. Paul Carmichael, who has won, you know, from Momofuku Sweden.
Yes.
If I've pronounced that correctly. And his Caribbean background. I'm wondering, and also, I guess that's a Central American theme. So I'm actually wondering if we're going to see more foods from Central America, So obviously north of Peru, but still in that sort of the
Nicaragua,
north
Guatemala,
and we'll get a little bit more heading towards. I'm wondering if these are sort of going to be burgeoning trends, a bit more of the authentic Mexican food rather than, you know, just what we think, tacos and burritos and enchiladas, different types of things. So in terms of actually saying a cuisine, I wonder if his influence, because I believe it's going to grow, as in the profile that he's brought to Caribbean cuisine in Australia, can only grow. And can only create a little bit more of curiosity and expose other chefs to actually trying the things that he might have grown up with or a second nature to him.
Yeah, look, I think it's a really interesting observation, and I don't think it's one that will be lost on Melbourne either. We're actually seeing, we've seen over the last couple of years the huge influence or the huge growth of southern style food from the south of the United States, from the Carolinas down, where we're sort of seeing a lot of barbecue and smoking and brisket. And those things have always sat on the fringe, but they've become very, very popular. I know you co-wrote a book particularly about that. And we've seen, you know, things like
things like
Fancy Hanks, where up in smoke over in the inner west. So we're seeing that's becoming almost mainstream now. And I'm wondering whether your thoughts, and I think they're actually correct, is that Central American / Caribbean style of influence, where it's lots of beautiful spices, and there's a little bit of heat coming out from Chile, a lot of brown sugar used in that region as well. So maybe that's...
Yeah, exactly. Mm. And you look at ceviche as well, and obviously the use of seafood, which, you know, something I care about a lot, because that's another trend I'd love to... I think is slowly happening, using... I'd like to see more fish heads, which in some cultures, are, you know, fish head soup is a very commonplace dish in some Chinese cuisine, things like that. But I'd love to see, you know, barramundi cheeks used more, heads used more, skeletons of fish used more. And also still, and I've been saying this to you for years, Pete, smaller fish used more often. So mullet, sardines, even leather jacket, put the leather jacket on, and beautiful, I guess we're getting monkfish from New Zealand at the moment, which is kind of interesting. Mm. But I keep yearning for those little, you know, gorgeous fried sardine skeleton, and their bones might sound odd, but they crunch and they're beautiful and they add texture to a dish.
Mm.
So I just, in terms of seafood, and then that, I guess, like you were saying, one of your guests, the chef, whose name slipped my mind, I'm sorry.
Virgilio Martinez from Central in Peru.
I'll just let you say it. Oh, it's gorgeous. But Virgilio, talking to him about the whole idea of seafood and the utilisation of different seafoods in ceviche, you know, and what I look forward to hearing what he thinks in terms of that, because we do need to eat, diversify our choices in seafood, and I know restaurants and chefs are slowly doing that.
Mm.
But I also really am excited, and, well, when you mentioned before about Korean food, and yes, I remember a couple of years ago talking about that, I think things like bibimbap is really the new fried rice, you know,
we're
going to see that a lot more.
Mm.
Well, it is really, and it's going to just become, it's very much part of our vernacular, like fried rice and spring rolls.
We're even
going
to learn how to say that word.
I can't say it.
It's hilarious. Hey, I've actually done a bit of a troll through the net, and I've got a bit of a list, and I would love your thoughts on all of these things that I found across my internet trolling. Hilary McNevin, of course, is my guest. She is a freelance food writer, commentator, book author, very, very talented woman. There's nothing she can't do, really. Oh, except cartwheels. I've never seen you do a cartwheel. Mm. So there we go.
Yeah.
So pasta is making a return, and pasta made from ancient grains rather than just normal old, you know, flour, flour and is that something you think might happen?
I think it's already happening. You know, if you look at even beautiful classic Italian dishes that use chickpea flour and things like that. But what I also... Our love affair of pasta will never stop. Put it. I know it's not good for my. Let's not talk weight. It's a beautiful dish.
Screw that.
And
the size of a small house at the moment.
I think that put it back on the map in terms of just really beautiful quality. When you've got a classically trained chef who knows how to do a reduction and knows how to make a great pasta and treat a piece of protein or the vegetable properly, the synergy of the dishes at Tipo are extraordinary, which made us all, in Melbourne anyway, go, hello.
Pasta can be good again.
So things like that, we're going to see other things, you know, the other cuts like cacio and tagliolini and things like that, I think, more and more. So we won't just have spaghetti fettuccine or linguine ravioli.
As long as I can still find a good gnocchi gorgonzola, I'm happy.
Well, gnocchi, and that's still, still a hard dish to find. I'm not going to say where, but I did have the worst gnocchi dish of the year last year in the inner north of Melbourne. And my children, as you know, their dad's Italian, yes, and the chef, and they're lucky to know what good gnocchi is. And it was like glue, Peter. It all stuck together.
Was it in a restaurant that you're willing to name or not?
No, not today.
Okay, we'll keep that one off the record.
Talk about making gnocchi for another time. But gnocchi still, what it reminded me was that there is such an art to making good gnocchi and good pasta.
Indeed.
And it's great that people are appreciating it again. And with our need and our love of seasonal local produce, the combinations of that is great.
Very good. Now, I want to talk about
exciting
peasant food, because across my research, I've come up with a variety of peasant foods that we may see this year. One is called Khachapuri. It's from Georgia, which is the former, not the US state, but the former state of the USSR, and it's made with bread and cheese and eggs. Asian peasant food, and by Asian I mean from the western part of Asia, so more of the influence of some of the Muslim parts of western China. There's things like pierogies and dumplings and those sorts of things.
Yeah, beautiful.
Okonomiyaki, which is a Japanese savory pancake, which is generally street food.
Yes, love that.
And so there's a number of these sort of peasant style foods that seem to be dominating the searches across the interweb. So
yeah, but I think Pete, at the end of the day, that's, and perhaps what the styles of many of the dishes you mentioned just there are not dishes we are familiar with in Melbourne, like where you and I live. But the thing is, they are exactly what you're saying. They're peasant food. They're food that people used up leftovers and used up ingredients, or just used what they had in the cupboard, which is where a lot of the foundation of really great food comes from. If you look with pasta with sugo, or like you talked about gnocchi, you know, the basic ingredients are so simple, and flour and eggs. And what I love about the dishes you're talking about, and if peasant food, our desire for it, I suppose, to find cheap and affordable but delicious and relevant snacks and dishes isn't going away. What I like is that we're actually heading out to other cultures, if you will, and actually trying to keep them being ethnically relevant and ethically and responsible.
And we've got to have some integrity around that.
Yeah. So I love the fact that I just looked up Khachapuri.
Khachapuri.
She will tell us how to say it properly. And but, you know, I look at that and I think, well, that just looks delicious. And I'm sure her mother has made that for her a million times.
Well,
and
probably.
It's something that, you know, and I just think, well, let's more of that and more, let's hopefully open our minds to more food that we can afford that's healthy for us, Pete, because we're still, none of us are getting skinnier. The obesity problem is still
here. No, we're not. And
you know,
I think
I said, sister, and I just wonder what, If we look at these lovely simple dishes, that yes, they're a source of energy, and that's not junk food. That's beautiful, simply made food.
Correct. And one of the other big trends that I'm seeing is and this might help with our waistlines, mine and yours both, the meatless sort of food. So starting to think about environmentally conscious, health conscious, sort of animal friendly dining. And one of the obvious things was jackfruit. So becoming a popular substitute for meat. Eating a lot more things like dragon fruit, which is from Asia, very close to us, and it's sort of the new, I don't know how to say this word, whether it's acai or archai, A-C-A-I, the new antioxidant
acai,
thingy.
Acai, can someone tell us?
Acai is a beer.
My daughter has a way of saying it. When I say it, she laughs at me and goes, "Mum, so not cool."
Sounds like arse.
Acai, but Google,
And also... Souping, you know, we were going through that whole stupid Nutribullet smoothie thing. Well, it's going to be all about fruit soups, apparently. So sort of looking at that whole meatless, environmentally health-conscious sort of stuff, we're going to look at fruits in places of protein and having a lot of fruit soup.
I have tried jackfruit instead of pulled pork in a dish that someone asked me to try, a vegan. And it was delicious. I was really taken aback. I was quite reluctant, but taken aback. But you know what, Pete, this is... as I can get on a soapbox every now and again. But what worries me about... I agree with you. There's going to... And look, beef broth, we're going to see more soups. Definitely beef broth has taken, you know, extended from its paleo sort of beginnings, even though it's just broth.
Thanks, Pete.
It's been around for centuries. And has sort of lurked into this mainstream realm, but also which is great to see us eat gazpacho and beautiful other cool vegetable soups or chilled vegetable soups or
chilled
hot
melon
dogs.
Soups.
And I'm all, yeah, melon soup is lovely. But what, if I can go back a step, what I'd love to see, if I say people like you and me, food media, what I would love to see people writing about this year is the soil from which all this stuff comes.
Yeah,
so we can't, yeah, well, yeah, and the quality of the soil, because I've read recently, and something that's coming up for this year is, yes, is the word regeneration rather than sustainability. Mm. But the soil needs to be regenerated. It needs to be healthy and constantly maintained to grow all the vegetables and everything else, that meats and everything we're talking about. And if we don't, if we neglect soil, which is easy to do in a world of climate change, we're going to, we need to people obviously encourage people more and more who are doing it already to grow their own vegetables, but also in the larger scheme of things, understand soil and understand how we need to look after the earth literally. Does that make sense, or am I going
No, you're right. And we've seen it in wine. We've seen a very big focus on terroir in wine. We saw the dish that Ben Shuri became quite known for was the potato grown in the soil from which it was grown, served in that. And I think you're right. And it sort of does lead to some of these other trends that I've got. I need to play a couple of quick messages, Hill. I wonder if you'd stay with us and I'll play these messages and come back to you. Cool. Hilary McNevin is my guest. She's a food writer, commentator, broadcaster, author, and all-round good bird. She joins me on the phone. We are looking at some of the trends that might influence us in 2017. You're on Cravings here on Joy 94.9, 27 minutes past one.
Cravings will be back shortly, so don't go too far. But if you do miss anything, you'll hear it on the Cravings podcast at joy.org.au/cravings via iTunes or your favourite podcast site. Sponsored by La Spaghettata. Over 35 years of food, family and fun at 238 Lygon Street, Carlton. Wine and dine with La Spaghettata for an authentic Italian experience. Pasta, wine, seafood, steak and so much more. Eat, drink, love with La Spaghettata. Call 9663 6102. Visit laspagatata.com.au or find them on Facebook.
Your community is our business. Joy 94.9.
Yes, indeed it is. It is 29 minutes past 1. You're on Cravings here on Joy 94.9. My name is Pete Dillon, 0427 Joy 949. I did put the call out before. I'm interested to know what trends you think or what you would like to see trend in the world of food. Maybe you like a good bread and butter pudding made with leftover Christmas panettone. Maybe you're a fan of the Aberdeen sausage. That's going to test my guest's knowledge. Or you can email onair@joy.org.au. 0427 Joy 949 is the text. Or you can tweet to Cravings Joy 949. Hilary McNevin is a food writer, broadcaster, commentator, and a fabulous dancer. She joins me on the phone to talk about some of these trends. Hey, Aberdeen sausage, are you familiar?
No, but I'm thinking it's Scottish.
So it's made with a lot of breadcrumbs and stuff and sort of compressed into a steam. And my mother used to make it. I thought it was quite ghastly.
Oh, really?
But it's making it. Everything old is new again.
You know. So I haven't. I actually, it's got bacon and mince. And
Yeah.
Is it another one of those, like, we're talking peasant dishes?
Very much so.
The leftovers, ground the meat.
Yep.
Let's cook it.
Stick a bit of tongue in it or something.
Because I haven't been, fair enough. A few leftovers, a few secondary cuts.
Indeed, but, or tertiary cuts, or the lips and the bums. That? Sorry?
Yeah, where have you been served that?
Oh, my mother served it in the 70s, but everyone I talked to was saying, oh, my God, Aberdeen sausage, that should come back. Now, I want to talk about...
toast come back?
Sorry?
Maybe it mince on toast. That reminds me of being should mince on toast come back? Strange.
Savoury mince with a fried egg on the top.
Savoury
Beautiful.
Mince. Oh, my God.
My mother always put curry powder in it. Teaspoon of curry powder in the mince.
Keen's curry powder.
My word. That or Keen's mustard. It's all we lived on. Hey, one of the other trends that I've discovered that we're looking forward to this year is scent in a restaurant. So I don't know if you've travelled in France, but there's sort of some burning herbal scents on your table or beneath your dishes or beneath your dessert. So, you know, that's sort of almost a little bit Heston, getting those flavours under those glass domes and things like a cloche. And then also having some scented compressed sawdust. So keeping with that environmentally friendly idea, but scented compressed sawdust in the open fire in the restaurants, which certainly makes a bit of a a scenty sort of thing in as well?
Like an earthy kind of...
Yeah, well, there's just
like
something that's...
Like you've got an open... faux open fire smell, that's what we're heading for.
No, but it's actually in the open fire. It's compressed sawdust rather than wood, so we're not burning lumps of wood. And the compressed sawdust is like a briquette almost, but it's scented.
Yeah.
So you could have a...
Scented with what kind of smell? Is it scented
well,
with?
I don't think you're going to put lavender in it, but you would certainly... If you think of those things that burn well, like hickory and apple and those kinds of woods... And this sawdust is scented. So I think it all sounds rather spectacular.
Well, I think it's great in the sense of course, it would all be designed very well to, if a dish had part of its element was the scent, of course, that's part of the flavour and the whole sensory experience. So it actually sounds quite beautiful if it's done tastefully.
Correct.
And as you say, it's not vanilla or lavender or something else.
Cappuccino.
Lemon fresh. You know,
Febreze. We're flavouring with Febreze.
But the whole idea of the sensory explosion of a beautiful dining experience, I love it. More
yes,
of it.
Yes, indeed.
Bring on the smells.
And going along with that, we're going to eat more dark stuff. So smoked, charred, dark roasted, dark foods like black rice. These things are going to sort of eke their way into our culinary
and
repertoire as well.
And black garlic's been around for a while.
And I'm in love with it.
And it's a wonderful flavour. Mm. But it's also, and squid ink, I know I'm stating the obvious, but ways than it's a commonly known ingredient, but it's likely to see more and more of that used too. Again, calamari is such a sustainable thing to eat, and you know, it's fast reproduction. And squid ink actually gives things such a beautiful colour, but also such that lovely, slight salty flavour.
Yeah, almost zinky.
I think that, it's just wonderful. So yeah, dark food. I'm not sure. Well, the blue drinks and things like that, the blue coffee, and the green bread, matcha bun,
mushroom coffee.
They're all a bit sort of flash in the pan.
It's silly stuff.
I think what I like too, Pete, about the trends we're talking about, like the fact of appreciating great pasta, is French is making its own beautiful comeback, you know, good classic French food. Yes. And with Florent's new place on Flinders Lane, Auteuil, just doing what he does so well on just off Collins Street.
And doing it simply.
Very simply, and the rotisserie chicken, it's comfort food, but I wonder, I often, when you look at food and trends, and I personally anyway look at what's going on in the world and what are we all yearning for, and I think with the big question marks that lie over the change in government next year in the States and what's going on, it makes complete sense to me that we're seeking out nice fresh vegetables and really good comfort food and classic flavours we know.
Mm.
Maybe in a slightly different way, as a different kind of pasta or a different... terrine, or a terrine made from a pig that from a producer we know about, or something like that.
Yep.
But they're still very nurturing and comforting flavours, and I think that's something that we'll see more. With some more French restaurants, I don't think would go Australia. How about that? Just bring
I think that's great. Tell me, Hilary McNiven, your thoughts on flavoured butter.
Context, Pete. I think many things.
You know, chefs for years have been creating sort of compounds with, you know, a seaweed butter or a yuzu butter or Abercrombie bloody butter.
Yes. Six blind nun butter, yes.
Exactly.
Yes.
Or, you know, with that beautiful Japanese pepper and that sort of stuff compounded in the butter that's actually going to be readily available to consumers to spread on a bit of tip-top white.
Well, I think, well, again, I'll go to the word context. When it's served within the context, it's meant to, if you go to Town Mouse and you have a beautiful sesame butter with that insanely good bread, you know, that they make, but you could only just eat the bread and you'd be happy. That's just beautiful because it's slightly salty and it gets your taste buds going and you're anticipating the next stages of the meal. And I remember, well, you and I both catering college people from years ago, cafe, you know, Paris butter.
Cafe de Paris. Cafe de Paris
butter, you know. So, yeah, of course. And we'd make it and slice and roll it up with wax paper and slice it.
Put all that bloody chopped curly parsley in it.
So it's not a new idea. It's just as long as it's done within the context of what's being put in front of you and not just, oh, look, we've just got, like we said, a crazy combination. Because that is so, that when butter is good, like Pepe Sayre or the... or there's a good cultured butter. You don't want to destroy its flavour. You know, the milk that's been used in that.
And the stuff that Naomi's doing up in the King Valley Dairy, their butter's
beautiful. King Valley Dairy as well. Her butter is amazing. So I think flavoured butters, they have a place, but I think it's about being careful where the place is used.
Indeed. Now, newish restaurant concepts. Are you familiar with poke bowls?
I have seen them online.
I've eaten them. I Uber Eats them. So there's already a couple of places in Melbourne doing poke bowls. I do occasionally Uber Eats one into the office. They seem to be everywhere, and it's sort of... It's not this fusion thing, but it's like Hawaii bumped into Japan, or Hawaii sort of bumped into this Nikkei cuisine idea, and we're putting it in a bowl, and it's supposed to be healthy, and of course it's all bloody white rice, so it's not really healthy at all, but it seems
it's white rice, but it's raw fish, and there's some sesame oil and chili pepper and soy and that kind of thing.
Potatoes on it if you want. I mean, there's not much you can't have with it. I've been ordering one with chicken and black sesame. It's quite delish, but...
Oh!
Mm. So there's
doesn't have to be raw fish.
No, it doesn't. So it's sort of like it's like someone's unwrapped the sushi and thrown it into a bowl and thrown in a bit of cabbage and decorated it nicely.
Yeah, I think it will become a trend. It will be maybe the next fried rice / bibimbap / pokey in 2 years' time. Yeah, do you know what I mean?
It's cold
because if it's something, but in this kind of weather, it sounds delightful. Mm. I would actually.
It's Hawaiian. You heard it here first, Hilary McNevin. Poke bowls. It's Hawaiian. We're going to love them. Hey, teetotalism. Now, I'm not sure if you're more familiar with this, but you know those teetotalers, people who don't or can't drink. But there's this new idea that we're going to be drinking more and more infused and flavoured teas and matching them with food like we match wine or we've matched cold brew coffee or, you know, there's a bloody water sommelier somewhere in Los Angeles who's got about 38 different types of water you can have with your dinner. What a pile of tosh.
That's taking things a little bit too far. I am all for, believe it or not, you know, sometimes not having alcohol, so that's great.
Once every 2 months on a Thursday, yes.
Yeah, there you go. But it's funny, when I don't have alcohol, like if I have an AFD, I will always have tea and lots of different types of tea just to keep myself distracted. But tea is a wonderful thing. Well, green tea in a Chinese restaurant, you know, it's... Or Chinese tea, I should say, when you're in a Chinese restaurant, it's just, you know, part of the course. It's like eating, drinking tea with your food.
Yes. I love tea. I'm so happy with a cup of tea.
Perhaps if we saw more mainstream sort of restaurants that weren't Chinese or Japanese offering tea like that in the terms of would you like tea instead of wine or something. That could be something.
Don't be ridiculous. Don't be ridiculous.
Why not?
Now, I've got a message
here. Why not? Didn't you ring me to say things to say some ridiculous things?
Yes.
I'd like to see someone do that.
Hi, Craven.
I'm going to get back to you.
Love your show. Now, this listener, Lance in Frankston, thank you, would love to see a lot more Indigenous restaurants in Melbourne, professionally run and preferably run by Aboriginal Aussies. Aboriginal people know what good food is and have just as much to offer as anyone else in the culinary world. I agree. We have probably 3 or 4 well-known Indigenous chefs in this country. Very healthy lean meats and flavours us Melburnians are seriously missing out on. Charcoal Lane in Gertrude Street, Fitzroy, is, as far as I know, a not-for-profit, and frankly, it's sensational. So thank you, Lance. Yes. Lance wants to see more Indigenous foods. And I think we've seen Kylie Kwong and Neil Perry play a little bit with things like Warrigal greens and that sort of stuff and start to bring some of those Indigenous.
And
there's Andrew Fielke, who's as white as the driven snow in South Australia, who's a great proponent of Indigenous ingredients, as is Jock Zonfrio from Arana, who's got access to communities that white Australians never get access to, and he's a feckin' Scotsman.
I actually think we should be... It's funny, isn't it? We see more and more people from out of Australia, like Ben Shuri as well, using Australian ingredients in the way it seems Australians don't know how to, and Renee Wenzepi when he came here. But things like finger limes are beautiful. I'd love to see, actually, Pete. That would be the trend I'd like to see go nuts. I was lucky enough to write an article last year for a newspaper, the Herald Sun, can I say that? Yeah. But about Indigenous ingredients and the ones that we can use at home are easy to use and accessible and becoming more and more available, like bush tomatoes and sea parsley and kwandongs, and lemon myrtle is something that we've seen around for a long time. But finger limes on freshly shucked oysters and things like that, let's bring it on. Let's eat more. I think your caller was right.
Yes, good on you, Lance. Now, I'll just remind people, we're actually going to catch up with Mike Benny next week. It's going to be a bit easier from a technology point of view because I was about to use some technology that I'm completely not familiar with. One last thing, Hill. I've got one last trend before you rush off and have another gin and tonic. Transparent menus, and I'm not talking about menus you can see through, but menus that have some calorie counts or nutritional values on the menu, a story, you know, on the wall that explains how people have sourced their ingredients, social media campaigns that profile farmers, and we're sort of seeing that already with, I think Pure South does this beautifully with their Tasmanian producers. We're going to see a bit more of that, I think.
I think farmers... Well, it's not so the menu looks like an encyclopedia or a glossary or something like that. But I think the whole idea of being and teaching front of house staff just the importance of, and the people that the restaurant and the chef deal with in the kitchen, it's almost like closing those barriers a bit more. That farmers should be celebrities too, if chefs are. I hate the word celebrity, but they, you know, I think we need to put farmers a bit more on the spotlight and about what they create and how they create, and Melbourne Farmers Markets and Miranda Sharp and all her work sort of would be great to get more spotlight on that, I think.
And the likes of the guys from Bundara Berkshires and Anna Kelly with her lamb and Anthony Cumnick all of that. Look, I do have to go, but I have one word for you that it will describe 2017 bar none. It is harissa. We are all going to go harissa. There will be harissa on everything.
Really? I thought we'd done that a few years ago.
Well, apparently it's back, and it's going to be back. It's had more comebacks than Johnny Farnham, I think, but yes. It's back with a vengeance, I believe. Well, we've gotten back into spicy foods like fresh turmeric and all and fresh horseradish, so
yeah,
I believe
beautiful.
All right, love, I'll let you chuff off. Yes, and I'll...
Okay, you have a lovely afternoon.
We'll do, and I'll talk to you again soon. I'm seriously going to be just up the road from you again. I can't believe that we don't manage to...
We will cross paths soon.
Yes, we will. All right, take care,
darling. Okay, darling, God's love.
Good to talk
to
you. Pleasure. That was Hilary McNevin. She is a cracking bird, I'll give you that. Talking to us about some of the food trends. And, of course, all of this will be on the podcast, so you can listen again and write something down because we do tend to talk quick and giggle. 17 minutes to 2, you're on Cravings. You're on Joy 94.9 with me, Pete Tillen.
Joy 94.9 is on air 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. But sometimes you can't always be with us when you want to. Here's the solution. Here's the solution. Listen to your favourite Joy 94.9 show anytime with our Joy podcast service. Our team of over 30 volunteers pick out the best bits from around 60 programs that Joy airs each week, made available to you for free download. To find a podcast of your favourite Joy show, search for us in the Featured Providers section within the iTunes Store, or find them on the Joy website, joy.org.au. Joy Podcasts. Any show, anytime, joy.org.au.
We're on the downward stretch. It is 15, well, a quarter to two, I should say, not 15 minutes to two. How very old-fashioned. 34 degrees, will be 37 any minute, folks. So I hope you're staying cool wherever you are. That was great to talk to Hill McNevin. We're not going to get to Mike Benny this afternoon. We will catch up with him next week to talk about some wine trends and where things might go with drinks. The top 50 is in Melbourne this year, and Virgilio Martinez will be one of those people that's attending. We did have a chat with him a little while ago, but I'm sharing it with you again. And I shall sign off and see you next week. Tad's back in the studio with me next week. We'll have much to talk about, including his cheese-making escapades in Europe. In the US. Until then, I've been Pete Dillon. Eat well, stay well. Bye. Virgilio Martinez is a chef like no other. He's from Peru, a former semi-professional skateboarder turned chef whose influence is directed to shamans and high priests who, in some senses, influence what he does. Welcome to Cravings.
Hello, how are you? Happy to be with you, talking.
Tell me about how you went from being a semi-professional skateboarder to a kitchen.
Well, it's not that... There's not much difference about doing skateboarding and cooking, you know, like you
work. I'm a chef and I can't skateboard.
You work long hours.
Yes.
You work with a team, mm-hmm. of course. Yeah, you have teams.
Yep.
You have to be very hyperactive, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Creative.
Right.
Yeah.
A little bit crazy.
Yeah. A lot of that. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
How did looking at your book Central, based on your restaurant in Peru, and your elevation, like you focus on the elevation of the topography of Peru, the elevation of your career to number four in the world. Are you a little bit surprised at how much attention people have paid to what you do?
I think now it's kind of, I have to pay attention of the expectation of the people about maybe Peru, mm-hmm. which is like a country full of history and tradition and ingredients and biodiversity. So if the restaurant is achieving to give you one experience and just translate all these things that are happening in Peru, I think the restaurant is gonna do good, and all this, the way that Central is improving and getting some attention is because of all these things happening in Peru, and it's just a consequence.
The focus on your restaurant is all about Peru. Everything is Peruvian. I'm assuming if you can't find what you need, then you don't use it.
No, Well, the ideas and the philosophy and the whole thing is like very global. I mean, like if you see Peru, one of the most biodiverse places in the world, and you see the world in Peru. So there are many things that you can find even here, being so far away that probably I wouldn't say that belong to Peru, but we share.
The background of Peruvian is. Is predominantly based in ancient Spanish behavior, but there's a huge Japanese population in Peru. There's great cultural diversity. Do you draw your influence from the diversity of culture, or do you draw your influence from what nature gives you?
It's more driven to by nature and driven by even the pre-Inca time, probably all this ancient culture and knowledge and. I think what happened after the Spanish came to Peru, it was just great. It was just still, it's a fusion, a melting pot. But this is not what Central is doing nowadays. We are like more focused on what's happening in nature, in the Amazon, in the Andes, and even in the Pacific coast.
And how are you influenced by shamans and high priests in villages that you go to? How much do they alter the way you think about an ingredient or an idea or a philosophy even around your food?
Oh, they are actually the real knowledge that we need, and those are our best suppliers on ideas, on styles, on not only ingredients. So we really have to show some respect to all these native communities that live in very far away from our cities. And I think, they are part of Central. So that's why our main goal is to communicate what's happening over there.
Is food for you a philosophical or a spiritual thing rather than something that's practical, rather than just feeding people? There's a spiritual side to what you do?
Oh, yeah, of course. Both things, like what you said, the spiritual and it's something that of course there's a philosophy behind the whole thing, but yeah, there's a lot of emotions in one experience, even in the kitchen. Everybody is so emotional, and you know, the emotion in the kitchen, you probably know, is different than the emotion in the dining room. Yes. You know, in the dining room the rhythms are different, so you have tried to be everywhere.
In the dining room they waltz, in the kitchen they rumba.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. the diversity of ingredients. I was thinking earlier about the similarity between yourself and to some degree Alex Atala, who I know from Dom in Sao Paulo, works with Amazonian tribes and sort of grows into the community and becomes a part of the community and supports the community to not just go in and take, that there's a bit of give back. And I understand your philosophy is very much like that.
Yeah, I mean, we just can't build a relationship with if you don't give something, and I'm not saying about just giving, paying a check or giving something like that. It's just giving your time and, you know, promotion, good conversations and stuff like that. So, yeah, I think we have to work. Nowadays, they are our best suppliers, and I was telling you, like, best suppliers on ideas, and actually they actually motivate our work every single day. So we still have to visit this communities probably every week, and we actually we need a team to do that. Now we work with other artists and artists and people that really are keen to and keen and very sensible to understand what's happening in these communities.
Virgilio Martinez is from Central in Peru. His restaurant is number 4 on the San Pellegrino Top 50. The Top 50 is about to come out again, and it times well with the release of your book, Central. Talk to me about the book and how you determined what the book would look like, not just from a visual point of view, but that is able to chart your journey, I suppose.
It's a book about an exploration of Peru, which has a strong message of preservation of natural ecosystems in the world. So it's how, well, Peru could be an example of, because of where we live in this biodiverse geography, we can show that we can do something with food and how food is connecting us. And we, you know, we just made a book based on different altitudes, and which is very, I wouldn't say complex, but it's
certainly challenging.
It needs sometimes to have a good read and think about, you know, very important things.
So it's a thinking man's book. It's not a cook's book.
Well, both, you know.
We're both.
Yeah.
Tell me about your childhood. Growing up, how did you see the world when you were little?
Well, I used to live by the sea, so I had lots of connection with fishermen but yeah, I lived in Peru where Peru was difficult. You know, the shining path, terrorism, and economy wasn't good. So it was like we had all these ideas of just leaving Peru or, you know, moving to another country, which is not happening now. I mean, like, now we are so happy to be Peruvians and so happy to you know, to visit different parts of Peru where probably before we were not able to go because it was dangerous.
So you now travel the world. You cook with chefs all over the world. What little pieces of their knowledge or their experience do you pick up and take with you?
Well, I, you know, I'm coming not enough for recipes. I'm coming for their philosophies. Like here in Attica, I see Ben's how he works with his team and how he uses some ingredients and how he talks. And for me, that's very important. So, whenever I have the chance to travel and see different restaurants, for me, it's the whole learning. And of course, it's a promotion of what I do. And at the end, of course, I want people to go to Peru and experience, not Central, experience what's Peru.
We've seen a huge growth in our understanding of and our appreciation for Central and South America. And if I look at us globally, I think for about the last 4 or 5 years, people keep telling me the next big thing in Australia is Peruvian cuisine. Is there a way to identify Peruvian cuisine like we would say Italian or Chinese or French?
I think in these days it's very difficult now to put a label like before, like this is Chinese, this is Italian, this is French. I mean, like now to say this is Peruvian is like, it's very difficult because what is it, like, is it Amazonian, is it Andean, is it Limian, is it Creole, is it Chinese Peruvian, which is Chifa, is it Nikkei, which is Japanese Peruvian. So just to put a label on what's Peruvian food is quite difficult. I think just like the way these things are now, it's like there are many cuisines and different concepts, and Most of them are, well, hardly influenced by different cuisines.
Is this your first trip to Australia?
This is the second one, yeah.
Both in Melbourne?
Yes.
What draws you here? What makes you want to come back?
Well, you know, every time in Central, I have probably two tables coming from Australia, and I get a long conversation with Australians, and mostly people from Melbourne.
And we're the classy ones.
But yeah, you know, Australia is a fascinating country. I see all the ingredients that you have, and it's like Peru, like ingredients that you have, but you don't know them, and you find difficult to show to your guests, or you find difficult to promote them, and I think we have lots of similitudes, and being so far away, you know.
And have you found an ingredient here in Australia that you like to work with and you'd love to have in Peru?
Well, the obvious one, kangaroo.
I don't know how to prove it.
But you have a lot of llamas here, right now, yeah? Yeah, yeah. Alpaca, right?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. More than in Peru, you know?
Really?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. So I'm going to steal some kangaroos. I'll do the same.
Is there, there's a project you have that's quite close to your heart that is not in the kitchen. It's sort of kind of your research arm, or your discovery space. Tell me about that project.
Yeah, that's called Mater Iniciativa, and we did that because we had the need of having a team to do what we were doing by ourselves. And at one point we found out that we didn't have much time, we didn't have sponsors, and it was difficult to do what we were doing, which was like just register ingredients that were not part of our gastronomy knowledge. So we start to talk about like working with different disciplines and understanding our territory, our geography, and in different aspects, you know. So nowadays we work with anthropologists, artists, and different disciplines, and this team is just, you know, like is promoting our culture, of course, promoting our ingredients, and also, well, actually nowadays is kind of the soul of what's happening in Central, because without this knowledge, there's no Central to do.
Fidelio, it's been a pleasure to meet you. I know you've got to get back to the kitchen and brief some chefs at a dinner tonight. The book is published by Fiden. It's a beautiful book. Every good bookstore will have your book, of course. And it's been a delight to meet you. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening to another Cravings podcast with Pete Dillon, online at joy.org.au/cravings, and live Saturdays from 1 p.m. on Joy 94.9 in Melbourne, exploring all that's finest in food and beverage across Melbourne and Victoria. Sponsored by La Spaghettata, over 35 years of food, family and fun at 238 Lygon Street, Carlton. Wine and dine with La Spaghettata for an authentic Italian experience. Pasta, wine, seafood, steak and so much more. Dine in and enjoy the authentic sights and sounds of Lygon Street. Or order takeaway now via Deliveroo, Uber Eats or Foodora. Eat, drink, love with La Spaghettata. Call 9663 6102. Visit laspaghettata.com.au or find them on Facebook.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.